5 seconds early, that scared me. All right, good afternoon, everybody. This is now the last talk of the day, woohoo. 2 hours before the attendee party. Great slot, thank you for all being here. So this talk is the inspecting and debugging using IE's new F12 developer tools. So in this talk, we're all gonna be focused on HTML, CSS, and JavaScript running in the web browser, specifically desktop IE 11, which we just shipped in the 8.1 preview. If you have an interest in Windows Store applications using JavaScript, using technologies like WinJS and things like that, there's a similar talk to this going on in the South Hall 202. So if it's store apps you're interested in, best place is to go to that talk. Otherwise, if you're interested in web client development, this is absolutely the right place for you. So if you've ever used a developer tool that's in a browser, like F12, Firebug, or Chrome Inspector, you are in the right place. In fact, actually, that's a great place to start. How many people have used F12 in the past? Okay, almost everyone in the room. So absolutely in the right place. So without that out of the way, let's get started with some introductions. So my name's Andy Sterland. I work as a program manager at Microsoft on a group in Visual Studio that builds tools for web applications. So we think of web client and web applications both being the Windows Store applications that some of you might be familiar with, as well as IE, so Internet Explorer. The tools we build ship in both F12, which we're about to show you right now, as well as in Visual Studio, both Visual Studio 2012 and the recently announced 2013. So, and with me up here, I also have Will.
Hi, I'm Will Kennedy. I work on the Internet Explorer Web Developer Tools team. So I am one of Andy's counterparts on the Internet Explorer side. And as a web developer for nearly 10 years, I'm really excited about the changes that we've made in IE's F12 tools.
Cool. Yeah, so like, hopefully some of you had an opportunity to see Carl's talk earlier today at 11:30. Did anyone see that talk? Okay, so Carl did an overview of all the tools. In this talk, we're just gonna focus on probably like three of the tools, some of the core debugging tools and inspection tools that we ship in F12. So it's gonna be a bit of a deep dive. It's primarily all gonna be demo driven. So we have a few slides, I won't lie. There are slides like the one you're looking at right now. Not very attractive slides, unfortunately. Do feel free to tweet us. We'll see there's a hashtag up there, F12 tools, and some people might be monitoring you. Just teasing. So yes, primarily demos, looking at the debugger, console, and inspection tools. There are two sets of demos, and the idea of the demos is really to go through the tools, show you some examples of how you can use F12, hopefully in your day-to-day job as a web developer, working on a website or a single-page application. The demo is kind of contrived. You'll see that same cocktail app you might have seen earlier on with Carl Edlin's talk, and you'll see us use the tools, and hopefully you'll learn something new and see some of the new features we have. So the first set of demos Will's going to do, and they're all going to be around designing a site, using the F12 developer tools as a way to inspect and edit and modify HTML and CSS. If, like me, you find yourself doing quite a bit of design work in a browser, or scratching your head and pulling your hair out at CSS, we're gonna show you how the F12 tools can help with that and make your life a teeny bit easier, or hopefully a lot of easier. And then for the second part, I'm gonna be talking about the debugger. So if you spend time debugging through JavaScript client code, how you can use F12 and some of the new features we've added in this release to make your life a teeny bit easier, or actually quite a bit easier. And then, of course, we're just gonna wrap up with a review and go over the talk. So if you have questions, we'll be around after the talk here for questions, so feel free to come up at the end of the talk. There isn't office hours after this, because after this is obviously the attendee party, but I think myself and Will be in the booths tomorrow, so if you have questions, do feel free to follow up either in person after this, at the attendee party later, where you'll be required to give drinks if you're gonna ask questions, or of course, in the booth tomorrow, downstairs in the big hall. So without further ado, I will hand over to Will, who's gonna do the first set of demos.
Cool, well, thanks a lot, Andy. So today I'm gonna talk to you about the DOM Explorer, the Style Inspector, and the emulation tools. The first thing I'm going to show you is something that I've always wanted in IE, and that's something very basic. And it's you're looking at something, and you want to inspect that element. So you right-click Inspect Element. As you can see, it pops up the DOM Explorer and selects the element in the DOM Explorer right away. Once I'm within the DOM Explorer, I can browse around using the up and down arrow keys, expand and contract elements to look at their children. We've added an awesome breadcrumb trail so that if you're stuck deep in a hierarchy of list items or something like that, you can easily navigate up the hierarchy and not lose your space. If you're also a fan of selecting the element with the visual tools, you can hit Control B, which is the select element shortcut. There's also this tool here that you can click and select it that way. As you can see, there are highlight boxes, which correspond to the layout tab in the style inspector. So you can see the offset for an element, the margin, the border, the padding, and then the blue is the actual box for the content itself. Something really great that we've added is if you hit Control tilde, you can bring up the console. And if you're looking for a specific element, for example, if I'm looking for a cocktail summary or any class, any items that match the cocktail summary class, I can use $$, which is a shorthand for query selector all. And what I'll get back is a list of items, if I do this correctly. Okay, so I'll get back a list of items in a similar way as query inspector all there. I can hit Control tilde to make that go away. Now, if you're like me, you're a big fan of the keyboard, so if you're navigating around here, you can go in and modify an element by hitting return and then tab through the various options. So let's say that I have this cocktail summary here, and I want to make it go away. I can hit return, tab through, and then I can set the style for this. So I can set an inline style, and I'm going to put display none. Disappears. And then if I don't like that, I can hit Control Z or Control U to undo and then redo. I can also change the ordering by dragging and dropping, which is nice. Moving on to styles. So we've made quite a few improvements here. You'll notice along the top that we have a computed tab now. That, along with the trace tab, can be used to figure out why something is being styled the way it is. The trace tab is going to give you something that's more in line with what your CSS shows, and then the computed tab is going to show something that better represents how our layout engine sees your code. And because we have a lot of properties in the computed tab, as you can see here, these are implicitly defined. We've added a filter to allow you to filter out whatever it is that you happen to be looking for. We've also added an events tab to the style inspector. So if you have an event attached to a specific element, it'll show in the events tab. So here you can see the click handler, and it points off to jQuery. So if I click this, it'll bring me to that code. And then this is also to the change function, which goes off to the cocktail.js. And you'll be able to see more of what that looks like in the debugger once Andy gives his portion of the talk. So something that's very useful, I'm going to show you the emulation tab next. And if I hit Control 8, it'll bring me there. In fact, for any of the tools, they have a corresponding Control plus number that you can use to quickly navigate to them. The emulation tab, the big thing here, if you've had a chance to watch Tony Ross's recorded talk on Compat, this is going to be the biggest thing that you guys will probably be interested in here. And that's because we've gotten rid of browser modes, which were kind of confusing in the first place because most people's understanding of browser modes was that it changed the UA string and the default document mode. But there was also some stuff going on behind the scenes which was pretty quirky. Also, it gave a poor impression of how a site would actually behave in a down-level browser. Through our efforts via modern IE and providing various VMs to help you guys test on down-level browsers, we're hoping that that will be a better solution and certainly a more accurate and dependable solution than shifting through the various document modes and browser modes trying to figure out whether or not your site is going to render correctly in down-level versions of Internet Explorer. In fact, we placed a little link to modern.ie right here. We've also added the ability to change your browser profile. And what this really means is you're able to emulate Windows Phone. So if you're developing a site and you want to see how it's going to render on Windows Phone, you can select the Windows Phone option here. And as you can see, it will change, render differently on Windows Phone than in desktop IE. And there are plenty of problems for me to fix there in this application with respect to that. You can also change the user agent string. We've got some pre-programmed. You can also add a custom UA string, which is important whenever you're dealing with problems that come out of that, either because people are not doing feature detection or because the server that you're interacting with is sending back wonky code dependent on what version of the browser you're using. We've also added orientation and resolution display functions, which work really well in combination with the Windows Phone browser profile. Finally, you can simulate GPS, either on or on but no signal, which is fairly self-explanatory and is a lot better than having to write your own test harnesses or test yeah, anyways. So I can go back to the DOM Explorer by hitting Control 1. And from here, I'll hand it on to Andy because he's got the fun part of the talk.
All right. Thank you, Will. Thanks for being on the mic. So just as my screen has to log out, typical. So for this part of the demo, I'm going to be talking about the debugger tools. But a couple of things you might have noticed. Like, if you didn't go to Carl's talk earlier today, these tools look radically different from the old tools. Radically different. We've really put a lot of investment in IE11 to try to make your lives as web developers easier. You know, this is kind of like a turning moment for the tools that ship in IE. If you can remember, like, when IE9 first came around, IE9 was very much a turning or a tipping point for the platform, for web standards, and for performance in IE. And so this release, we are really focusing on tools. Like, as Carl mentioned earlier, because at the end of the day, as the applications get more sophisticated, more complicated, as the platform provides a richer set of capabilities, you know, an ever-growing complex matrix of capabilities, it gets ever harder to debug your sites. And so the tools have evolved, like over time. You know, it's no longer a case where people are using alerts. Well, actually, you probably still do use alerts. But now you have a much richer and sophisticated set of tools. And one of the tools we spent a lot of time on this release was the F12, the debugger tool in F12. So in this particular demo, I'm taking that cocktail app that a whole bunch of people seem to have been working on. It's probably the most worked on 120 lines of code ever. And I'm going to search for something. And someone's reported a bug to me that, unfortunately, when I search using this cocktail app, it doesn't seem to match the title. So the first drink here, Kyoto, I have actually no idea what this drink is, but when I search for it, it's missing. So as a developer, I'm going to go in and see how I can use the debugger in F12 and try to fix that problem. So the first thing, when opening up the tools, you'll notice is kind of like I mentioned just a second ago, the tools have radically changed. We simplified the UI. There are actually no menus in this anymore. If you remember old F12, there were dozens of menus with lots of hidden features. Like, we had preprint, in fact, in IE9, I believe, in F12, but it was hidden in a menu, so no one even realized it was there. Now it has a whole button all the way up here. And there was tons of features like disabling CSS and disabling JavaScript, which probably wasn't the most used feature in F12, since there's not much use for a debugger if you're going to disable JavaScript. And so in this release, we've really tried to focus down and reduce the clutter, reduce the amount of tools there, and simplify the UI. So here you can see a debugger. It's pretty standard. You have your execution control along the top. Your main, source viewer. It's not an editor. F12 doesn't support edit and continue, but it's a source viewer, so it'll show you HTML, CSS, JavaScript, XML, whatever you downloaded to the client. It has a file picker where you can see a list of all the files and you can open them. One of the nice new features in this release of IE11 F12 is a document well. So just like you'd expect from pretty much any modern editor, like if you've ever used Sublime, Visual Studio, or pretty much any editor for the last 10 years, you can open up multiple documents at once. So this is obviously really handy, especially if you, you know, build up a list of a couple of documents you want to open, like you're working on like default JS and default HTML page. You can just have them along the top rather than using the file picker, since that file picker can get somewhat unwieldy if you have dozens or even 100 or more items inside it. Another thing that actually we try to do once you have the tool is try to find the source code that's relevant to you. So we obviously have a search, and I already typed in something here, so let's just delete that. And so as you can see, as you type, it searches. The scroll bar for the source viewer highlights matches for you, so you get a sense of where it is in your code. And more than just that, more than just navigation, as I search through my code, we'll also search through other files. So as I finished in one file, I'll go through the next file. So you can search your entire code base just by typing, since obviously, you probably have sites with dozens and dozens of files, right? It's not just like this demo where there's three files and we're all good. And so it could be a pain in the proverbial to try to find these things. So we try to make that a little bit easier. In fact, if in this case I found myself in jQuery, I don't really want to go in it, so I'm just going to go back to Cocktail.js, because I'm pretty sure the function I'm interested in isn't in jQuery. And using the scroll bar, just going to go down and set a breakpoint. And so, in fact, let me just type a step in my demo to make it a bit more interesting. Okay. And now I'm going to set a breakpoint. And so I'm going to type in the input box. And so what you can see now is I hit the breakpoint. So for people who are used to old F12, you'd have to start debugging, undock, get it onto a separate window, rearrange your window somehow, like either snap them or pull out to a secondary monitor. In this version of F12, we realized that that was a huge pain. Like, who enjoyed pressing start debugging and refreshing their site? No one enjoyed it? Well, it's gone now, so you never have to enjoy it again. So obviously, it's actually a serious pain, because in this demo, I did a couple of repro steps. You know, I typed a single keyword, K, and of course, I hit my scenario. But you can imagine if you're doing a game, you know, perhaps you have to get to level 5, which might not be so bad, actually, to hit your repro, so you don't want to rerun that just when you found your bug. So in this version, you can stay docked, and you can be at a breakpoint. It's interesting to note, though, the screen isn't painting, so you can't interact with the page further. The page is paused at a breakpoint, so you can't go type things or do other things. And so since this is a new debugger, I'll just quickly introduce the different windows. As you can imagine, in the top right, you've got watches, so everybody should be familiar with watches. In this release, we're collapsing both the locals, which we used to have a separate watch, into one, so you only have one place to look for state inspection. We have scope variables, so if you're familiar with JavaScript, of course, if you have a lexical scope, like a function, it can take a closure, a capture on variables. They're all inspectable, all the way up to globals. And of course, you can add watches, as you kind of would expect. And we have the basic execution control. So in this case, I'm just going to start stepping. And so, of course, the first thing that happens, like this happens to me all the time and probably happens to you guys a hell of a lot, is you step into a library like jQuery. Like, who uses libraries like jQuery, Ember, or something like that? Pretty much everyone. And who ends up stepping into the code when they don't want to? Pretty much everyone. So, of course, the next thing you do is they all get the hell out of here. That's what step out's for. And so then I'll continue and I'll step back in. And so I'll step back out again. Except this time, I've hit a classic problem. I was using an each wrapper in jQuery. So it takes the node list and enumerates over it, obviously. The problem is if you step out, it steps out of that each. So you're like, damn, I've stepped out of my scenario. Let's go back and do it again. So one of the things that's new in F12 is you can use a feature we call setNextStatement. So you can right-click, setNextStatement. You can change where the current execution pointer is, essentially. Ooh. So, yay. So rather than having to go back through that function or rerun my scenario, I can just move the pointer back. So there are some limitations to this. It's not a magical teleportation, transportation device. Data is the same. So for example, if I set variable x while I executed and I move back up, we don't roll back your execution. Like, unfortunately, it's not a magical time travel machine, which would be awesome, and maybe for the next release. Time travel tracing, talk to you later. Anyway, which is fantastic. The other feature that's really powerful in combination with setNextStatement is, of course, run to cursor. So if you noticed Carl's talk earlier today, he set a breakpoint, you know, and ran to the breakpoint, which works really well. You can definitely do that. But you can also just right-click and run to cursor. So rather than stepping, or, you know, like, as much fun as stepping can be, you know, sitting there pressing F9, F10, you can just right-click and go to that statement. Another important point for all of these features is they're all keyboard accessible. So if you prefer to use a keyboard for stepping, execution control, they all have shortcuts. I'm going to be mainly clicking in this demo so you can see which buttons I'm pressing, since you can't see my keyboard. In fact, I can barely see it. So here, obviously, we're just going to continue to step. And we're going to look for our bug. So like all great coders, I decided to write this code by copy and paste, which is my preferred method for coding. And so what I did is I have this lovely code here that two lowercases things, because I'm doing a string comparison, so I obviously want to make sure it's all in a consistent case. And I copy and pasted it, and I made a pretty silly mistake with my keywords. As you can see here, I forgot to change one of them. And so, in fact, another feature that's pretty nice in F12 is as I was hovering around, and you can see up here, we have those little white windows. So that's a data tip. So as you hover around variables, so let me find something that's a bit more exciting to look at. Oh, this is dollar. You can inspect datables, variables without having to add a watch. So watches are fantastic when you want to monitor something over time, and you see it change, and it will glow red when you step, and it changes the value. But if you just want to look at something quickly, data tips are a fantastic way to do that without having to add a watch. And of course, if you do want to add a watch, you can just click a button, and it adds it, as you'd imagine. So it's an easy way to inspect variables. Of course, you can also use the console and other things, completely up to you. So as we're stepping through this, it's obvious that I made my mistake here. So what I can do is I can quickly change it here, you know, just to force the value. But what I really want to do is I want to go back to my source code. So let's go and do that rather than just changing it here. So now when I step, I'll branch the right place in the statement, the right condition in this branch. That's actually another interesting point if you ever have to use set next statement. You can use it, obviously, when it comes to switches, like switches and ifs and stuff, like if you ever want to force a branch and stuff like that. It's also handy for that. One caveat about set next statement, though, is if it doesn't work in every scenario, like you can't step to functions that don't exist yet or have gone away, like they're inside a closure and stuff like that, the feature will be grayed out if it's not applicable. In general, it's fantastic if you're inside a function block. Then you can step away and control it as you like. So let's go back into Visual Studio and make my first change, which actually is going to be increase the resolution. So the first thing I'm going to fix is that filter. And then while I'm here, in fact, let me just do that. Like I said, I don't believe in typing, so we'll copy and paste. That way I'm guaranteed to have consistent spelling mistakes. And so, of course, I've refreshed, but I've hit the breakpoint. So that's pretty common. You know, as you're building up a repo or as you're debugging, you set breakpoints, and eventually you build up a whole list of them. And at some point, you found your problem, or you fixed your bug, maybe, and you want to get rid of them. So the quickest way of doing that in F12 is there's a keyboard shortcut to delete all, which can be handy, or of course you can also just disable them all. So that way they're all disabled. So if, like me, after a while you build up a number of breakpoints and you get fed up of like, ignore this one, you can just manage it in the breakpoints window, which is exactly what that window is for. So fantastic. Now when I type, hopefully I will get the right results if I type into the right window. There we go. Great. So for the next set of features, I'm going to add a web worker to this. Does anyone use dedicated web workers, out of curiosity? It's probably one of the least used features, so you'll be excited to see we support debugging for it. So when you get the opportunity to move web workers, you'll have a great debugger for an F12. So for those of you who aren't familiar with web workers are essentially, they operate as a separate execution unit. It might be a separate thread. That's very like browser specific. But it allows you to run code that can be synchronous and not interfere with the UI of the page. So in this application, I've decided to go all rocket scientist and add a web worker to download new cocktails. Like normally, frankly, you'd probably use like an async XHR, and that would do just fantastic. But in this case, I don't like async XHR, so instead I'm going to use a web worker and a synchronous API. So again, with a copy and pasting, this time from a text buffer. So what you can see here is I've obviously just added a new web worker, which is this magical thing here, and you add an event listener. The way you communicate with web workers is you post messages backwards and forwards. One of the interesting thing about web workers that's different from a lot of multi-threaded solutions or systems like that is that there's no shared state between the worker and the page. So you don't need syncs, you don't need locks and stuff like that. And instead, you just serialize to a JSON string, send it across, and receive it. So I'm posting a message. And so let me add some other code. So I'm going to add a code that will, what I've done is I've set up an interval that's going to fire every 2 seconds or 200 milliseconds, which is 2 seconds, if my math's anywhere any good. And it's going to send a message to the worker. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to have some simple code that logs it. And I'm also going to give you, so here it's a console API. So in a few minutes, I'll be doing a bunch of demos for the console APIs, but this is probably the first one you'll see, console.dir. And what this does is it logs an object that you can inspect in the console. So with luck, what will happen Once I add the code for the worker, because this is going to do nothing, and I'm going to add the broke version of the worker for some reason, because I think that's the best one to add. Okay. And so what you can see here, the workers are pretty straightforward. It listens for a message, just like, because that's the communication channel between that and the page. And on a particular message, it's going to get some data from a service. It's going to do it synchronously with the lovely false parameter on XHR, which is something you should never, ever, ever do. But at least in a web worker, it's not going to block my UI thread, so the user can still interact with the page. Otherwise, it'd be super concerning. And then it's going to take the response data and serialize it as JSON, and then send it back to my main page, where I'm just going to log it, and we'll work on the rest of the code later. So this time, when I refresh my page, okay, so there's a couple of nice things for F12 for web workers. The first thing is, in the call stack window, you'll be able to see a list of all the web workers. So if you're using workers on the page, you can see them. You can also pause them. So we have the ability to pause just on a specific worker. So if you're familiar, there's the break all button, which is up here, and that breaks on the next statement that executes. Wherever that statement is, it's just like, break, don't care where it is. So if you ever have to use a worker, that can be a real pain. Say your worker's off busy calculating prime or a Fibonacci sequence or something hilarious. You'll keep breaking there when you want to break in the page, and of course, the reverse is also true. When you want to break in the worker, you break in the page. So we've got a little button here that breaks in the worker. Unsurprisingly, it lands me on my first line of code. And I'm just going to continue to step. In fact, I'm just going to run. And unfortunately, if I go to the console, I won't see anything logged. So something's gone terribly, terribly wrong, which isn't too surprising, really, since the snippet said it was broke. So in this case, I'm going to use another feature that's in F12, breaking on. You can change the breaking behavior for exceptions. So exceptions fall into two categories, really. One is called unhandled, so that's when an exception is not in a try-catch, and it bubbles up to the root, and it pops from the page. And that's the cause of those lovely script error dialogues of the old, which shouldn't be around anymore. And of course, the other one is first chance exceptions. So if you have an exception inside a try or a catch, typically you won't break on it. And that's pretty damn good normally, because often libraries and things like that can make use of exceptions to break on a certain point of code or to detect a feature. So, you know, for example, you could see if the DOM was ready by constantly trying to insert something, and then it fails. So in this case, what you can see, I've broken on a first chance exception. So there's a couple of nice things we do for exceptions. Obviously, there's an inline message, but we also log the exception object. So if you're familiar with Visual Studio and things like that, one of the interesting problems about a first chance exception in some exceptions is the exception object itself, unless you've captured it in a variable, like inside your catch block or somewhere else, it's gone, so you can't inspect the data from it. So if you're using a library or something else that has some rich error information, you've lost it. Here, of course, we've got the description. And this number, which if anyone cares to know, is actually a H result that gets translated into a number. Not normally that useful. And of course, you get the stack object. So luckily for me, it's pretty obvious what went on here. I just made another typo. And so I can go back to Visual Studio and change that. OK, and I can go back to my application. And I'm going to turn off first chance exceptions, because that's going to be a pain, and then refresh the page. And hopefully this time we'll see something log in the console. So, and this actually brings up another point while I'm talking about the console. So one of the things we've tried to do in this release is greatly improve the console. If you're anything like me, you tend to use it quite a bit, even just for inspecting data. In fact, does anyone use, I'm trying to think of a good way to phrase this. How do you guys use the console a lot? Like if you were going to inspect data, do you use it in the console or a watch window? Console, hands up. So you mainly look at it in the console, fair enough. Do you write code in the console? Like, do you like experiment with little like code snippets and stuff like that to see if it's there? All right. So one of the great things, oh, you can see it's busy logging these messages now. So one of the things we've done in this release for the console is you've still got the full screen version, but you can also have the console on any of the tools. So for example, if I go to the profiler or the memory tool or any of the tools, you can use the console. So it's great for using the DOM Explorer and stuff like that. You can use the console as a REPL and type against it. And one of the biggest changes, as I just kind of briefly mentioned, is that we have inspectable objects. So, of course, one of the nice things about adding an object in the console is you want the ability to inspect it and drill down, see its children, expand its properties, and things like that. So in the past, in IE10, God, getting my versions mixed up, that wasn't possible. Instead, you had to add a watch. In IE11 with F12, you can use the console. And as you can see, there's a full object visualizer. It even has things in pretty colors. Well, pretty is kind of subjective, but... we also do things like grouping. So here you can see all the functions are defined under a virtual node. which is helpful, because if you're inspecting an object for state, typically functions aren't that useful, because you see things like, you know, toString, define getter, define setter, and all the other things. When typically, you know, for an object, you want to look at the actual state of the object, pull out variables from it. So we have a fully inspectable console. And also in the console, which is pretty nifty, is we have IntelliSense. So if you're typing, you can get IntelliSense, which will take the running page. So in this case, I'm looking at window for some reason, which is a fantastic object to look at, because it has thousands of properties, and nobody knows what half of them are. But more usefully, you can also look at HTML elements. So it's not just like a visualizer for JavaScript objects, for looking at properties of objects and things like that. You can also use it to look at HTML nodes. So if I do that, and I type in window.document.body, you can see I've got a HTML visualizer. And at this point, I wish I turned off my web worker, because pretty soon it's going to scroll off the screen. But anyway, so here you can see that we've got a HTML element called body, not surprisingly, and you can inspect the element, looking at the script tag for no particular reason, you can inspect the element as it was in the DOM Explorer. So it's pretty nifty, because of course, when you're dealing with HTML elements, you often want to be able to inspect like IDs, data dash attributes, class names, tag names, stuff like that. And in an object view of a HTML node, that gets lost in like the 100 or so default properties that you have on an object. Of course, if you want to see the properties of an object, you can always do that with a evaluate as object. And now when I scroll to the bottom, you'll see the HTML div that was added, obviously between the two log messages from the web worker. So you can use the console as a REPL. It also has a multi-line mode. So if you're typing functions, so for example, function, how you get IntelliSense on that. And let's call it names and link. All right, I boo-boo that. And what I'm going to do is document.title, because I lack all kinds of creativity. And now when I run it, I, of course, you know, you have a function defined. And so you can see it and call it, and it'll change the title. Woo. So the interesting point there is that often one of the problems as a developer using JavaScript and HTML is it can be confusing to know what properties are available on the DOM objects. Now, obviously, there's a lot of them, especially now as we get more and more APIs, more and more complex objects. It can be very confusing to keep track of all of them. So having like an IntelliSense window, a little REPL, can really help you find those and make sure you've typed the right ones. Oh, great, I've got updates to Visual Studio. Let's install those. OK, so the next set of demos, I am firstly going to turn off my web worker, because that's going to make showing the rest of the console stuff hilariously difficult. So let's just delete this. Save that and refresh. So for the next set of demos, I'm going to show the other thing that's really handy in the console these days. So I mentioned before that the console is great for using it as a REPL, for inspecting objects, for looking at data on your page, for finding APIs, making sure you've got the correct names for them, at least if you're like me and not very good at typing. The console is also a great place to provide instrumentation to the tools. One of the challenges for any tool, of course, is we don't know much about your page, frankly. Like, we know a ton about how it executes, a ton about the low-level gubbins of it, tons about stacks and heaps and all sorts of other nonsense, but we don't have any semantic sense. Like, we don't know when an important event is happening or when a user is sending a mail or doing something in your application. So I'm pretty sure most of you would have used console.log at some point. Okay, a surprisingly few number of people have used console.log. So the console APIs are not just a bunch of APIs you can use in that window in F12. They're also a bunch of things you can use in your application to report data to IE. And in this release, one of the nice things, or the nicer things, is that the API we have in the tools is also replicated in the browser. So if you've ever had to use console.log in F12, in IE, say, 8 or 9, or IE 8, actually, and you forgot to remove that console.log, and you ran your page, you'd have seen an exception, which was damn annoying. Question already. You see, and actually, that's a very good point. If you ever use console, you should remove it and strip it from your shipping code. It's always great fun working on the developer tool and seeing all the code that people forgot to strip from their production websites. But if, for chance, you're using it on your local site, one of the nice things is that in IE10 mode, all the APIs are there. So you won't get an exception, at least this time. But of course, you should always ship it, strip it. The console object is not a standard. Kind of like a de facto standard in the sense that browsers share a similar implementation, but there is a working group that doesn't even, is part of the WebDriver working group, that's looking at it, but there is no standard, so you should absolutely always remove it. But for the sake of this demo, and probably for a lot of you will still use this, I'm going to use the console. So the first thing I'm going to show is just a very simple example, as soon as I find my cocktails. I'm obsessed with alcohol. So console.log. I really can't live without IntelliSense. Tell summary, don't fail me now. And just going to log a string. So this isn't particularly exciting. So console.log is typically used to log a string. It's the most basic API. As you can see, it logged the titles. That's not too surprising. More interestingly is the console.dir API, which logs an object for you to inspect. So this time, and now I am going to copy and paste, rather than just logging a simple string, it'll log an object which you can inspect. So refresh the page. And did I save my file? Yes. Console.dir, console summary. And then refresh my page. Oh, scroll down. So one of the nice things about the tools is if you happen to have the scroller at the bottom, it auto-scrolls. If you move the scroller to look at a specific object, it doesn't scroll anymore, which is fantastic when you want to look at something, not so good when you forgot you scrolled. Luckily, that's the rare case, I hope. As you can see, it's logged the object. And as you can, you know, as you would expect, you can inspect it. Fantastic. But one of the problems with it, so one of the other interesting things that you can use the console for is not just logging data from your page. You can also kind of use the console itself as a tool to its own end. So one of the things a lot of people perhaps do is they try to time things. So say, for example, I'm interested in the performance of my page. And to be honest, I could use the awesome visual profiler we ship in F12. But since the demo is about console, I'm going to do the cheapest thing possible and just time between two points in time. So one of the things we added was an API called console.time. And what it does, it takes a high-precision timer from one point to the next point and just logs how much time it takes. So a really simple API. And so it's basically a replacement for instrumentation in your code. So if you've ever done like new date minus old date to try to get a sense for how many milliseconds something took, don't do that anymore. Use window.performance, which is also a high-performance counter. But you can also use the console. So rather than cluttering up your code with variables that you will have to later delete when you remove all your console code or whatever. So here, the nice thing about this is I can have as many of these going as I can create strings for, which is pretty much an infinite number. And now when I refresh the page, what we should see when I finish scrolling is a timer. So it took 396 milliseconds. So I can use the API to get a very quick and dirty point in time measurement. But one thing that's starting to happen is that it's great that I've got all this logging, but it's starting to clutter up my console. You know, obviously, I can go ahead and clear it, but that doesn't really help the problem, because as soon as I press refresh, it's all going to be back. So another API we added on the console object was console group. So what this API is it allows you to group log messages. So say you're working with a template or some sort of binding language, or you're working on a widget or something like that. And that widget can be very verbose. You can have messages and stuff. But for a lot of the time, you don't care about it because you're not tracing that particular component. Maybe another team worked on it, another developer, or maybe it's just something you're not interested in. So what you can do is you can group the messages from it. So in this case, I'm going to create a group saying adding cocktails, great, and then I'm going to collapse it at the end. So the nice thing about group is that you get this hierarchical view. And so you'll see that in just 1 second as I refresh. Make sure the browser has focus. And so you can see, rather than logging all that stuff to the console, it's put it into a little group, which you can expand, and all the data is still there. So these things can be nested, so you can have as many of them as you want, which is pretty nifty. So it allows you to start to declutter up your console and make a much cleaner, nicer interface for it. So another set of APIs we added to help with common tasks. So we're trying to expand, obviously, the console, like I said, is getting a bit of a de facto standard. So you've seen many of these in other browsers. But it's also a nice place to add features that perhaps you would have added your own code for. You know, like the first version of any sort of instrumentation, of course, is to write code, like that pops an alert box or, writes to a little thing in the corner and stuff like that. So we're trying to take some of that functionality and add it into the tools. An example of this is a feature called console count. In this case, say I'm interested in learning how many matches. Like, so I want to see how many matches I have on a page. Like, as I type in that top box, how many items were filtered, or not filtered out, rather. So, of course, I can instrument my code. I can have a counter. I can output it to a div or something like that. Or I can log it to the console and have a big stream of data. But one thing I'm going to do in this one is I'm going to make a counter called filter. And I'm also going to reset it. Because what this API does is every time this API is hit, it increments a number, which is not too surprising. Count. Reset. Okay, so now when I run this, and type in here, you'll see that I've got two, whoopsie. Did I type that wrong? Yes, I did. I forgot to say which counter to reset. First boo-boo. Well, probably not. So now when I refresh, I shouldn't see the colon one. And so here when I type, you can see the number just updates. So rather than spamming the console, it's a little API you can use to count things, which can be nifty in some scenarios. But more to the point of using the console as a great way to try to use the other tools and to provide that instrumentation we use, there's a bunch of other APIs, or at least two more I'm going to talk to, which you can use to control other tools. So one thing we've had in F12 and we have in this release as well is a script profiler. So if anyone's familiar with this, it's the JavaScript script profiler. It times function execution, aggregates it, and provides you an instrumented view of the execution of your code. Instrumented profile view. It's not sampled. So here I can time how long it takes to filter something. But one of the challenges with a profiler is it's very hard for a tool to say, start here, stop here. Like today, if you're using the profiler in F12, you have to press a start, stop button. Like, you know, you have to time yourself. You have to start it, you have to go to your page, do your action, switch back to the tools, and press stop. So of course, unless you're working really, really fast, you're not going to be anywhere near as accurate as what's actually happening in your application. So one of the things we want to use the console API for is a great way for you to tell us about what's going on in your application so we can make some sensible choices. So here, I want to profile the filter, how long it's going to take me to do that filter action, you know, to fade out those objects. So what I'm going to do is filter, give it a name. The API takes a name. And I'm also going to use the keyword, filter. And then I'm, at the end, going to tell it to stop. So unlike time, this doesn't take a parameter for ending. You can only have one profile open at a time. And so now when I refresh the page and happen to be looking at the profiler, you can see that as I type, you can see what happens is that the reports build up. So there's a report for every one of those profiles. So you know, obviously this times exactly when that started to when that stopped. So it's a very handy way of delineating your scenarios. So if you had an action the user takes, you can start a profile, and you can stop it at any other point in time. In this example, it was in that same function. It doesn't need to be synchronous like that. It could be at some other point. Like, obviously, if the user was doing something, you can start it and then stop it when the action completes, perhaps on an XHR and stuff like that. So it's a handy way to really profile a specific point in time. Again, helping us know more about your application. You can also do a similar thing with the memory tool. So there's another API. Has anyone seen Carl's demo earlier where they saw the memory tool? Has anyone seen the memory tool? Okay, almost no one. So one of the new things that I'm accidentally introducing in IE11 now is the memory inspector or the memory. What this does is it allows you to take snapshots of your page from a memory perspective. So it takes all the objects from the roots, like window, down to the leaves and shows them in here and also provides an ability to diff. So you can see where you're leaking objects and stuff like that, which is fantastic. But again, it suffers from a similar problem that if you're looking for leaks, they typically happen because something happened in the page, like an XHR happened, the user typed some data or something like that. So again, it can be tricky to press a button to try to time those actions. So here, one of the other APIs we added was a console.takeheap snapshot. And okay, and so what I'll do is I'll refresh that. And now when I type, So what it does is it's taking a snapshot, and then you can see there's objects that are growing, and so you can use the memory tool, which there's a whole other talk on. If you're interested in the memory profiling talks, Jonathan Carter is doing a talk tomorrow, which is in the context of Visual Studio and store applications. However, the memory profiler in F12 and the memory profiler in Visual Studio for JavaScript are identical. The only differences you'll notice, apart from that they have different colors, since these tools all the way are written in HTML and CSS, the colors are different because they're styled differently, but the tools are identical. So many of the techniques he'll be talking about in that talk are relevant here. Of course, in the Windows Store applications, you have other things like the WinRT and stuff, which aren't particularly applicable in this scenario. So I won't talk to this much. But if you're interested in performance, do go to Jonathan Carter's talk. So that's an example of a couple of ways in which the console can be really useful as a way to instrument your application, instrument your page, and provide us information so our tools can be more effective. And I completely forgot one of my favorite features, so I'm going to go back and add that web worker that was irritating me earlier because I completely forgot to do a demonstration of something we call trace points. So one of the nice new features we added in F12 and IE11, let me just find this code. Ta-da. Now all the ugly code's going to come back. Change this. Yes, great. Refresh page. All right. So one of the, we've got a profiling session. One of the challenges you might notice is that while you're profiling, you can't be debugging at the same time since it affects the profiling data too much. In this release, we've done a lot of work to make sure that debugging isn't, how should we say, as slow as it used to be. Like if you've ever enabled the debugger in IE previous versions, you notice a huge performance impact. Like as we switched to the interpreter in the engine and things got a bit slower. In this release, there's a ton of work been done so that the when you're debugging, your page isn't as effective. Isn't as affected by the debugger. So it's not 10, 11 times slower like it used to be. It is still slower. It is impossible to make a debugger have no impact. So obviously when you're profiling, you probably don't want it on and we'll turn it off by default so your profiling data is accurate. So a bit of a diversion there. So back to the scenario at hand. So one of the nice features that we added in this release was a thing called trace points. So trace points are very similar to breakpoints, which might not be too surprising. And of course, I made the mistake of being at a trace point while still adding one. So let me just edit this. So what a trace point does is it's like a breakpoint. It's tied to a statement. And we have per statement breakpoints. It's tied to a statement and it executes code. But unlike a conditional breakpoint or a breakpoint, it doesn't raise a break reason. Instead, it logs a message to the console. So what I can do is I can say like hi, which isn't very useful. And so let's bring up the console, let's clear it, and then let's just run this thing again. And so, of course, what's happening now is you're seeing a bunch of highs. So one of the interesting features about this is it provides you a way to instrument code without modifying the code. Since it's fantastic to use the console API, but of course, if you're looking at a production site or perhaps you're debugging someone else's code or something like that, you can't always do that. So trace points provide a mechanism for you to run code at an opportunity that's linked to something in the application. So an even more interesting, exciting example of this, because it's not just simple strings, you can also log, you can execute code. So you can execute anything with a trace point, which can cause all sorts of hilariousness. But in this case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to make a timer. So I'm going to say, let me just type this, milliseconds to go. And so this worker was on a counter. And what I'm going to do, as you can see, time elapsed minus that, is I'm going to show how long that counter took. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do time elapsed, no, wait time, let me get this right, minus time elapsed. And plus that. So what this will do is it'll execute that statement. So it's just like JavaScript. You're just executing JavaScript. Question? Actually, I put it in the wrong place, and you notice that. Like, so it breaks at the start of the line. So what's about to happen, I realized this afterwards, is that it's not going to run. So breakpoints in general and other things, they execute as before the statement does, so they stop. So in this case, I'm pretty sure what will happen is I'll get a bunch of undefineds. If it works, it'll probably just get an exception of not defined, and then it'll crash. Oops. Wow, I didn't expect it to open at Microsoft.com. I must have clicked on the link. So yeah, so let's actually put that in a better place, shall we? In fact, let's just pause the debugger, and then we'll remove it. And so really, I wanted to put it here or somewhere like that. Insert trace point. And unfortunately, I'm just going to log wait time now, since there's no. That's what I get for being too keen. So as you can imagine, pure magic is happening right now. And so this is a preview build, so there may be one or two bugs left. And that does raise a very interesting point. I really do hope you do use the tools and do provide us feedback. We're always interested, especially when you find fantastic bugs like this. And if you get a crash dump, that's even more handy. But that aside, we're just going to open up a new version. Because one of the nice things about the F12 tools is they load a lot faster than Visual Studio, in theory. This is where I have to really suffer. Okay, so actually, that was the last piece of demo I was going to do was on trace points. So since this thing is not cooperating anymore, or is it? And I don't want to debug it anyway, right? Oh, no, here we go. All right. See, when it works, it's a lot faster. It just takes a bit of time sometimes to get it work. It'll all be fixed by RTM, don't worry. Hopefully. So yeah, so the only point I guess I was going to make, and it's probably too late to make that now, is you have access to local variables. So here, for example, I can log, let's find something. Rather than using the dir object, I can log like, here we go. So you can add a trace point that logs the, my favorite feature doesn't work. Okay, so we're going to go back to slides now. Since the demo is not cooperating. And I'm just going to talk briefly to, oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. So to summarize the demo, so in this version of F12, we've done a lot of work to improve the debugging and inspection features in F12, you know, to try to bring it up to almost near, you know, an industrial standard debugger. There is a lot of new features and a lot of redesign work. As you can see, the tools have been rebuilt from scratch. Interestingly enough, they've been rebuilt in HTML, TypeScript, and CSS. Like, I think, I don't know if I should be quit on this, it's like 250,000 lines of TypeScript or something like that. So the tools themselves are in HTML, which is fantastic because we have to use the tools to debug the tools, which creates all sorts of interesting problems. But that aside, it's a great experience for us as well, you know, to be kind of like building an application and getting experience with that. So one of the nice things, the other things I showed you were around set next statement and run to cursor. So some simple things to help you with execution control. Do try them out. They will be helpful when you're stepping and you get frustrated about stepping into library code. Other things, web worker debugging. So when more than two of you start using web workers, you'll be glad to know there's a whole bunch of features to enable you to debug those things, as you'd expect. So, you know, just as you expect to debug normal code, you can debug web workers. And then really, a couple of nice features such as trace points. We also have some things that I didn't show you, actually, I forgot, like pretty printing. Another nice thing is an ability to set breakpoints on statements, like I mentioned. So rather than just doing per line breakpoints, in F12, you can do per statement breakpoints. So if you have ternary operators, you know, the question mark, you can set them on either side, which is really handy for a bunch of different reasons. And then lastly, I think I showed some of the stuff with the console. So how you can use the console to be more productive through things like IntelliSense and the object visualizers, both in JavaScript objects and HTML objects. And then, of course, the console APIs. So how you can use the tools, basically, you instrument your application and provide information to the tools so the tools can accurately reflect your scenarios. And so with that, I think I'm going to hand over Will to do the wrap-up.
All right. Well, I'm so excited about the changes that you guys made to the debugger and the console. It's just fantastic. So briefly, I gave a quick overview of the DOM Explorer and Style Inspector and the emulation tools, and then Andy went through and showed you the debugger improvements and the console improvements. And one thing you'll notice is that throughout, we've added things like IntelliSense, better usability stories. You can see that we've addressed a lot of the top developer pain points with respect to IE. If you guys could download and try out the tools, send us feedback, we'd love to hear and have a dialogue with you. So you can hit us up on Twitter or on via email, and we'll be happy to chat with you. And we'd like to open up the floor to any questions people might have.
So the question is, does IE11 come with Windows 8.1? So yes, IE11 comes with Windows 8.1. And so you can get the preview version as part of Technic, MSDN, and a bunch of other places right now. Question to the gentleman there? So the question is, after we've released IE11, will the tools continue to update, or will they be on a separate case? Will they continue to update, or is it just with IE? So the tools in IE will stay with the tools in IE. We're not announcing any future plans and stuff like that, so we don't know. But one interesting thing to keep in mind is that many of the tools, like the DOM Explorer and stuff, ship in Visual Studio, and Visual Studio is on a quarterly update. So indeed, the memory tool that I briefly showed already was shipped in VS Update 2 3 months ago or something like that. So you might see some of the tools update outside of IE, but no plans beyond the current announcement. Okay, question for that gentleman first. So the question is the debugger in IE going to help the debugger in Visual Studio? And so the answer is, indirectly, there are a bunch of shared components. The UI in F12 is completely different. Like, it's HTML, CSS, JavaScript. Visual Studio is native and managed code. However, some of the components that run in the engine, like the run in the runtime, and some of the components that run inside IE do update, and yes, they do work together. So we share, like, the watch visualizations are all the same and things like that. So some things are in common, but the UI itself is very different, as Visual Studio is a different tool with a lot more editing features and stuff like that. I think the gentleman there had a question. So the question is there source maps of minified JavaScript? I was wondering when that came up. That was the fourth question. Mm-hmm. And the answer is no. There is not source map support in F12. There is in Visual Studio, though, but not in... So the question is the debugger extensible? Like, can you add visualizers and things like that? And unfortunately, no.
No.
There is no extension points in F12. So do any of those, the question is, do any of those console APIs work in Chrome or Firefox? And the answer is yes, actually. A good deal of them do. In fact, there was a great talk that from Adam Nchin, I believe, who had a comparison of the different console APIs. And so many of them do, and they perform pretty much the same thing. But some we have, some they don't have. Like I mentioned, the console API isn't standard, so you shouldn't rely upon it to be consistent. Wait a minute, the our tools never crash. Blast me. The unfortunate, but yes. So the question was, are any of the data persisted across like crashes or refreshes or sessions? And so the answer is some data is, like window position, where you put the watch windows and the splitters, but breakpoints, no, are not specifically persisted in other things right now. So some things are, but a lot of things aren't, unfortunately. Yep, so the question is, if you have the Visual Studio debugger attached, can you also use F12? So you can't use the debugger in F12 while Visual Studio is attached, but you can use the profiling tools. So in general, the JavaScript engine and IE can only have one debugger attached at a time. It could be any debugger. I think Visual Studio and F12 are the only two really right now, but there are some third-party ones like DebugBar and a couple other things. But no, you can only have one debugger at a time. The question was the performance enhancements we made to make debugging faster carry over to Visual Studio? And the answer is yes. In fact, another thing that wasn't demoed in this is you noticed that you didn't have to refresh the page to attach. That's also true for Visual Studio now. So Visual Studio, if you go to attach to process and attach to Internet Explorer, you don't have to enable debugging mode by going to Internet options or something like that. Visual Studio now supports what we call in dynamic attach. And that works in remote scenarios as well if you happen to use Visual Studio across MSVSmon. The question was, since the console object isn't always available in all document modes, is there like a polyfill or something like that? So firstly, in the latest document modes, the console object is available with or without the tools loaded. Yeah. It's a no-op, it doesn't do anything, but it's there, so it doesn't throw an exception. In older document modes, we tried to be truthful to the API set that was available in that document mode. So in IE8 mode, for example, there isn't console.log and blah, 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 and so you do get an exception. I believe there are polyfills from it. We have to double check, though, unless anyone else happens to know. I don't think jQuery polyfills it, but there certainly are. And many people, like myself, you create a stub. You're like, if console log, don't do anything. If not, implement it. But still, the recommendation is always you should remove console logging code from your production application, ideally. Yeah. All right, well. So what's the rationale between single line? Sorry, the question was, what's the rationale for having a single line and multi-line mode console? So the rationale really is if you're using the console as a REPL, like to write a small function, for example, you're experimenting and you want to do 3, 4, 5, some amount of code, it's much more convenient to do that in multi-line mode rather than single line mode. And so it's a very contentious issue. As some people, it changes the shortcuts. For example, in single-line mode, enter commits and executes. In multi-line mode, it's control-enter to commit and execute, because enter, of course, puts a new line. Whereas in Chrome, single-line mode, shift-enter adds you to a new line. So the rationale really is that there's this mode where you're in and you're trying to create larger code, like a function which does some things, and that's more applicable to a larger editing surface. It is an intense debate topic, though.
So. Yes, especially between us two.
Yes. If you have awesome suggestions for how the enter key should function and how we can do it differently, follow up after.
Console.dir, is that a snapshot of the
object, or is that fine? The question was, is console.dir live or is it a snapshot? So what happens is the object gets logged and the initial properties that are displayed are not live. So say you logged an object at one point in time, it shows you the strings and the variables, but when you click to inspect, it reevaluates it. So if you ask for any more things, like things that weren't on the initial objects, like their expression or something else, then that becomes the new thing. So it doesn't take a snapshot of everything. It just takes the properties off the first level.
I'm sorry.
Yes, just the immediate properties on the object. Okay, so one more question, I think, 40 seconds. The question was, are the tools I talked about today automatable in any way? And so, there's a, not directly. No. However, of course, they're accessible. So if you're familiar with technologies like MSAA and stuff like that, like obviously our automation tests and other things drive those things. And so it's completely feasible to, you know, fire buttons and stuff like that, like through an external harness, but there are no APIs exposed that directly manipulate the tools, outside of the console ones, obviously, I showed. All right, well, if there's no more questions.